Let's turn this morning to the book of Joshua, and we'll read chapter 2. So after the death of Moses, Joshua has received the leadership of Israel. He will lead the Israelites into Canaan, into the promised land. They're still on the other side of the Jordan, but before they enter the land, they will spy it out. And so we'll read Joshua 2 as Joshua sends spies into the land. And there we meet Rahab in Jericho. Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. "Go, look over the land," he said, "especially Jericho." So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, "Look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land." So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab, "Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land." But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I don't know where they had come from." At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, the men left. "I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them." But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, "I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is a God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now then, please, swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death." "Our lives for your lives," the men assured her. "If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land." So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. Now she had said to them, "Go to the hill so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return, and then go on your way." The men said to her, "This oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless, when we enter the land, you have tied the scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and unless you have brought your father and mother, your brothers, and all your family into your house. If anyone goes outside your house into the street, his blood will be on his own head. We will not be responsible. As for anyone who is in the house with you, his blood will be on our head if a hand is laid on him. But if you tell what we are doing, we will be released from the oath you made us swear." "Agreed," she replied. "Let it be as you say." So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. When they left, they went in the hills and stayed there 3 days until the pursuers had searched all along the road and returned without finding them. Then the two men started back. They went down out of the hills, forded the river, and came to Joshua son of Nun and told him everything that had happened to them. They said to Joshua, "The Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us." That's God's word for us this morning. dearly loved congregation of our Lord Jesus Christ, would you say that your faith is all in? Would you maybe even able to say that your faith is desperately all in? Likely a difficult question to answer. How much would we risk because of our faith? And maybe as long as it's hypothetical, it's maybe hard to answer, and we think, well, I don't know. The choice has to be made. What I would do. But it's exactly these kinds of questions that our passage forces us to ask ourselves this morning. Because Rahab really does risk everything in faith. And she ends up gaining so much because of her faith. And she had to. You know, the theme this morning is Rahab's ark, because there are real similarities between that story of Noah, the judgment that came, and that one family that is spared because of faith. And Rahab and her family who are saved from the destruction of Jericho. Again, by faith. For this very reason, as we already saw, Rahab's faith is used as an example in the New Testament. Not just mentioned in the letter of James that we read, but also in Hebrews 11, verse 31. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. By faith. We're called to pay attention to Rahab's faith this morning. Now, the story of Rahab is tied in with the Israelites taking the land of Canaan. And it all plays out, at least this chapter, plays out around the city of Jericho. Now, we didn't read the rest of the story, but I'm sure most of us will know, especially you kids may know this story because it's a great one, of how the Israelites take Jericho by marching around it day after day, and eventually, as they worship the Lord, as they cry out, the walls just give in. They take the city. The Israelites, too, had to have faith, because that is a strange way to try to take a city. And what helps us appreciate their faith, and also Rahab's faith, is to just picture this morning Jericho as an impressive city. Because it was. Mentions the walls of Jericho. It was a fortified city, a stronghold. And imagine it being a decently wealthy and busy city, because it's on one of those main roads in and out of Canaan. So merchants would come in, travelers would come in. There's wealth, business in Jericho. It's also a strategic city. That's why it has walls. It would have been one that, well, would be ready for war. And it's one that kind of is the gateway into the Judean hill country, as it would be called later. Strategic. It's going to be the first city that Israel has to take as it goes into and receives the land of Canaan. By all of those measures, Jericho would be a tough nut to crack for the Israelites. But this is exactly where the Lord is leading them. It also means that Joshua is thinking strategically, and he wants information. He wants intelligence. So he sends two spies to scope out the situation. And we know that this would have been a dangerous mission for the spies. It shows right away in this story. I mean, the spies are going into Canaan. There is no network of allies for them. where they can easily get their information. They have to suspect that anyone they meet in Canaan is really an enemy and will hand them over to the authorities as soon as they realize just who these men are. So, in all likelihood, right there, they blend in, they try to hide that they're Israelites, they maybe pretend to be merchants or just travelers on the road, and they try to sneak into the city unseen. And they go to Rahab's place likely that already had merchants and travelers, people far away from home, where they could stay the night, receive net intel and information from all those who are visiting there. But their mission seems to be doomed from the start. No sooner did they enter the city and they find a place to stay, and the king of Jericho was told, "Look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land." Very quickly, people have seen through their disguise or realized who they were and what they came to do. And the king takes measures to catch them, likely, you know, just put them to death, maybe set them up as a warning for the Israelites that they are prepared, that they will kill anyone who tries to dare and take Jericho. It's that point in the story where the gates are shut and the men are locked in the city. There's no way out. Except that Rahab hides them. Right? She fabricates a story, says, "Yes, I didn't know where they were coming from, but I sent them out and they left already. And they went back to cross the Jordan," and sends the policeman off on a wild goose chase outside the city. And she saves their life by covering for them. Somehow, their disguise doesn't seem to work very well, because even Rahab realized who they were and saved them by leading them up to her roof. All of a sudden, these spies find out that there is an ally within the city of Jericho. Can you picture their surprise as they're led up to the roof? Maybe even their doubt, their skepticism, like, why is she doing this? Is this a trick? She's just going to hand us over. And the absolute confusion. Why? Why would she do such a thing? Until Rahab explains it all to them. And this story is structured in a way that allows us to really highlight the confession of Rahab in those verses 9 through 13. Because this confession is remarkable. Rahab says, "I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death." Likelihood, the spies were right. News did travel, and you would hear it there at Rahab's place. Because Rahab has been listening, and she's been picking up all of the news of what has happened to these people as they traveled, as they were led out of Egypt, as they destroyed the kings across the Jordan. She learned that they have this God who is the Lord, of heaven and earth. And she showed the spies a kindness, that in return they may show her a kindness. And it's no wonder that this chapter highlights Rahab's confession, because it is remarkable. It's remarkable for a couple of reasons. Right? Isn't it remarkable? A remarkable confession because of who is saying this. Here the Israelites are sent out to take the promised land. And as we read on, as the Lord gives instructions for Jericho, we know that the Israelites are waging a holy war. Because the Lord already way before in Genesis had been very clear that when the sin of the Israelites reaches its full measure, the judgment is going to come, and it's going to come through the people of God. What the Israelites are doing is judgment on the Canaanites, to put an end to their wickedness. And we know that one of the things that the Lord hates was adultery, prostitution, and sexual immorality. And he warns his people many times, because they fell many times, against being seduced by Canaanite women and sleeping with them. And you have that in mind, and you hear of Rahab, and you think, well, she is the preeminent example of what is wrong in Canaan. Living in a wicked city, among a wicked people, as a prostitute. Expect judgment. And on top of that, before we get to Rahab's confession, we see that she lies to the authorities and ends up betraying her city. And again, we may be kind of confused by that, maybe even quick to judge her. There have always been many debates on this story too, like whether lying would be permissible in this case. Is she doing right or not? And sure, certainly would think that, as we've seen, that loving your neighbor ranks highly, as it appears in this case, and keeping these men safe. And that in Rahab's case, just allegiance to the Lord. But again, just highlights the messiness of the situation in which Rahab is being brought into God's people. She has to lie, deceive, hide these men, turn her back on her city. And then there's the content of her confession that is remarkable. You know, what she says about the Lord is amazing, that he is the God of heaven and on earth, that he is powerful, that he is the Almighty One. No one can stop him, and she knows it. That's why she's like, the fear is melting our hearts. We know he's unstoppable. Which is remarkable. Like, don't take that for granted. Yes, the Lord had done amazing things, and yet how often are we, and many other people, just blind to what the Lord is able to do, and yet still wonder if there is something that could stop him. Shouldn't we expect that there were people in Jericho who may have heard all of these reports about what the Lord had done, and yet sat in their city, maybe the king and his leaders together, being like, oh, but they haven't faced our walls. Jericho is a great city. We'll trust in the walls. We'll trust in our defenses. But Rahab doesn't think that. In the city of Jericho, we expect that others may have heard these reports. Oh, the Israelites have destroyed these kings, and they may be heading across the Jordan. All right, maybe there's some time, because it's flood season and the Jordan isn't as easily passable. So we have some time, but we're going to start packing our things, and we're going to have a go bag ready. Maybe stay with family in Hebron or Jabus or one of the other cities. They think that they could escape the judgment that's coming. Maybe at least wait it out. Rahab doesn't do that either. She doesn't leave the city. She doesn't trust in the walls or the defenses of the city. But what she does is truly remarkable. She doesn't just confess that God is powerful, but she has an inkling maybe just the faintest idea or hope that God would be gracious. That he and therefore his people would show her a kindness because she would show them kindness. Don't you see how strange that is? Surprising. That she realized that judgment, death, and destruction are coming to her city. Well, then she says, I will risk it all. And I will risk it all by asking for mercy from the one who's bringing this judgment. She had to know, have had that inkling, that God would be gracious. It's a desperate move. And it risks everything. She's given up on her city. She turns her back on it. She faces the potential punishments of the authorities if they find out. She has to trust these spies to keep their word. She has to trust that the Lord would be able to keep her safe whenever the city actually falls and the Israelites come in with violence. So as she risks it all, she asks for a sign. And she receives the sign of the scarlet cord. Now, because scarlet is the color red, some allegorize it to mean that it points right to something else that's red, and that is Christ's blood. Because it is true. Rahab is saved by the blood of Christ, as we all who believe in him are. But I don't think the connection is really in that color of the rope. What we do see is that this sign reminds of all those other stories where people are miraculously saved from judgment. I already mentioned Noah's Ark. But also think about the other one that was just happened 40 years before to the Israelites. They were about to leave Egypt. I mean, they had to too be saved from judgment. Their firstborn in Israel were only spared because of the blood of the lamb that was painted on their doorposts, being a sign that there was faith there, that the angel would then pass over their homes. What we see is that faith seeks refuge in all of these stories. And it's faith alone that makes all the difference. And so I wonder what we think about Rahab's faith this morning. I mean, leave for a second how God will reward her, or how she will be received by the people of God. Just take in the story and take in the facts. She's a prostitute working in a wicked city. Right? She's a Canaanite, not one of God's promised people. In fact, ones that are going to receive judgment for their wickedness. And then judgment appears on her doorstep. And she changes. She repents. She believes. And I wonder, how do we look on those who hit rock bottom, or those who are like blind to judgment until it's right in their face before they believe? Do we read this story and think, well, Rahab was just the lucky one. I mean, she got away. She just squeaked in. Would the temptation be for us to think, well, yeah, Rahab believed because that was a faith of necessity. She had no other option. Whereas ours or mine, well, it's one of choice. I believed way before it was just down to the wire. Her faith was one of desperation, of running out of options. But mine, well, there's no real desperation in my faith. If you think that your faith is just a matter of choice, of weighing your options, I'll ask you again, then how much will it risk? Because whatever the answer is, I don't think you understand the nature of faith. And that it means for each one of us to take refuge, to take shelter in Jesus Christ. It means to stake everything in the one who is able to save you from the coming judgment. Yes, this is about judgment to Canaan. But there is a judgment that is coming and intended for all people, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And everyone will have to give an account to the God who is God in heaven above and on earth below. But you can risk it all and trust that the one who will judge you is also the one who will show you kindness, mercy, as you entrust yourself to Him. James so clearly says that Rahab was saved by her works, which revealed that her faith was living. I absolutely love how James does it, because he puts her right in line with Abraham. You know, James is writing to Jews, and he probably had everyone agreeing with him on that point. Yes, faith, and it has to show in its works. I mean, Abraham, he was the father of faith, and he was the most righteous man, at least most of the Jews thought that he was the most righteous man to ever live. Of course, he's the friend of God. He's the postcard of what faith is and living faith is. And James is like, yeah. And then just look at Rahab. God dealt with a Gentile, with a Canaanite in the same way. Abraham was called to believe, to show his faith by works. So was Rahab. And she was saved because of the very same faith. The very same faith that was alive. Abraham risked it all. As he left his home behind, as he even offered up Isaac, Rahab risked it all, hiding the spies and entrusting herself to her home in that wall of Jericho, that cord out of the window. Could it be that we don't know how to answer that question, whether we would risk it all? Because we don't have a sense of the desperation with which we need Jesus Christ. That we need this story. And that we need the example of Rahab's faith. And that we may have faith because this story also just shows the mighty works of God. That God is mighty to save. I mean, the spies learned that as they realized that before they had done anything, God had already lined up an ally for them in enemy territory. An ally who would leave behind her nation, give up her city, risk her life to entrust herself to the living God. I mean, don't you think these spies had gone out and they had prayed to the Lord, you know, bless our mission, may we stay undercover the whole time, and as soon their cover was blown, they're wondering, what now, Lord? And yet then they receive more encouragement than they could ever have. Here is an ally. And here is an ally who confesses so clearly. Look, the Lord has given you the land. Our hearts have melted. Great encouragement for them. God has gone before them. And Rahab experienced that God is mighty to save, as she and all those who stayed in her house were kept safe. Yeah, her house was in the wall. Yeah, these great walls are going to come down. Yet they're spared. Chapter 6, we hear of them brought out of her house and brought to the Israelite camp. She and her family lived in Israel from then on. Because as we see the example of Rahab's faith, we also see that the Lord rewards it greatly. I mean, she and all those who are in her house are saved, and they receive life. They find their place among the Israelites, even marrying into established families. I mean, she She's included in the genealogy of Christ in part because she marries into one of the leading families in Judah. A Canaanite prostitute, saved from the rubble of a city devoted to destruction and judgment, ends up being the great-great-great-grandmother of our Savior Jesus Christ. And why? Because what God did for Rahab is what God does for all of us in Jesus Christ. And look at this story and you see God's grace. God's grace to work in those who would least expect it. Rahab's not beyond the grace and the work of God. See God's power to keep safe those who stand in faith. Even in a wicked generation, in a wicked society, and God's love to richly bless those and reward those who entrust themselves to Him and to His kindness. And don't you think this morning that all of those words are also for you and for me? You are never beyond the reach of God's grace. That we may see God's power and believe it, and to be encouraged to risk much, you know, to stand in faith even amongst the wicked generation, and to not doubt that whoever entrusts himself to the Lord's kindness will be rewarded hundredfold, yeah, even more. Amen.